South Carolina Supreme Court in 1985. On May 11, 1994, Justice Bennett was elected Chief Justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court and was administered the oath of office on December 1, 1994, and assumed office on December 17, 1994. Justice Finney has served in numerous civic and professional organizations and is presently a member of Bar Association on the local, state, and national levels. He is chairman of the board of directors of Buena Vista Development Corporation, chairman of the Claflin College Board of Trustees, and a member of the University of South Carolina School of Law Minority Advisory Committee and the Legal Responsibilities Committee of the United Methodist Church General Council on Finance and Administration. I would like to take this opportunity and have you to join me in welcoming Judge Bennett this evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Jenkins. Ladies and gentlemen, if you tell me I've got as much time as I'd like to look at these beautiful people, I might be here for a while. I guess the first thing I want to do is to let Joe Bethay know that I am here and I was on time because that was the last order he gave me. It is of particular significance that I'm here and I'm on time because today is my birthday. I'm 64 years old today. Thank you. But there are some people I want to take to deviate for a moment and say thank you for being present. I see my pastor, Reverend Bynes, present. I see Marion Jones here, who was largely responsible for me leaving Conway, where I was teaching school, and moving to Sumter, where I have engaged in the practice of law. I see Jim McQuilla here, who was in law school with me more years than he is willing to admit. And I don't know whether Josepha is still here, but she was here a little while ago, and I was delighted to see you. There she is over there, and she calls me some bad names occasionally when I get on her, but she ain't seen nothing yet. I was delighted to see Jasper and Doris Smith's daughter because Jasper was a client of mine when he was in Sumter back in the days when I was driving an old Valiant and had only one suit. I'm delighted to be here. And there's been some talk about the fact that laymen, lay people, the laity of the church are more than the ministers. Well, not only are you more in number, but you're prettier. And I'm delighted I've got an opportunity to share a few moments with you. You know, ladies and gentlemen, for the past 40 years, I have been in constant contact with persons who have been disenfranchised by the secular world. And I tell you today that the empirical data suggests, I believe it mandates, that there is a direct correlation between the decline of the historical black church and the deterioration of the quality of life in the black community. The quality of life transcends economic conditions, and it includes personal accountability, family stability, moral values, work ethics, and professional integrity. You know that on one hand, we have emphasized with victims who suffer personal injury, loss of life, and property damage as the indiscriminate targets of lawbreakers. On the same hand, on the other hand, it is sad to see the future of a youthful offender ruined because of senseless petty crime. And even more distressing to me as an individual is the tender age of the large numbers of youth who commit serious crimes such as robbery, rape, and murder. Now, what is the problem? The problem is illegal drugs. The problem is abject poverty. The problem is the broken home. The problem is babies being born to unwed children. There is another problem. There is a problem of the lack of external guidance and internal restraint. And there is the problem of parents who are unprincipled, undisciplined, and unanchored. And that's where we are part of the problem. During the past 25 years, we have made significant social and economic progress. But in the process, I wonder, have we neglected the character traits and the institutions which enable us to withstand centuries of oppression and break the shackles of slavery and segregation? I know that a major factor in our undoing is that we have allowed the spirit of the church to wane. I tell you that worship has lost its fire, and too often the ministry has lost much of its power, its prestige, and its leadership ability. In a sense, you and I have traded our souls for what we thought was a good life. Much like the rich man described in the parable in the 12th chapter of St. Luke, and I know I'm treading on that other luncheon that's going on over there now, so I won't go far. Like that parable in the 12th chapter of St. Luke, in a year that his land had produced bountifully, this man made provisions to store his excess crops and then said to his soul, "Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said unto him, "Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then shall those things be which have been provided." We have given, you and I have given our blood, sweat, and tears to open up all the doors to a good education. But too many of our young people cannot take the advantage because their brains are being cooked by drugs. You and I have struggled and bled and sweat and cried and done a lot of other things to acquire nice homes and luxury cars for our personal comfort and convenience. But we have allowed them to become barred prisons because we fear the criminals lurking on the outside. You and I have sacrificed and struggled to have the freedom to come and go as we please, to choose labor or leisure at will. But we have very little happiness and no peace of mind. We are anxious by day and tormented by night by problems that seemingly have no solutions. But ladies and gentlemen, I share your belief that a part of the solution lies in an empowered church that offers an anchor for the soul, that offers an opportunity for relaxation and for uplift. Groups such as the Black Methodist for Church Renewal are pointing the way back to the resurgence of power in the church. Hopefully, we will be able to, in collaboration with the ministry, build a strong and viable church within each of our communities. Heretofore, we have been drunk off the wine of the world. But now, we must be sobered by the harsh light of a new morning. We recall the message formerly preached by the Black church, and we must remember the spirit of that church, and occasionally we ought to sing the songs of that church. I don't like anything better than a spiritual on a Sunday morning. My preacher's laughing at me because, you know, we've been down this road once or twice. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? In certain areas, such as human relations and economics, we have progressed in some respects, while in others we have retrogressed too much. Extended family ties and unconditional friendships have fallen victim to our alleged cultural evolution. As parishioners, we tend to judge people according to the standards that we erect. Our theory of helping the unfortunate is to spend hours in committees discussing problems and solutions and then return to business as usual. Let me remind you. Let me remind you once more that there is a war going on out there. And we need to have meetings and we need to have discussions and we need to have committees. But I urge you, grab your sons and daughters. Teach them what it is all about. Because if you don't, they are going to, the only thing being built without restraint today is prisons in this country. And they're building them for us. And I urge you to grab your children and teach them what it's like and implore them and by example show them the way it's going to be. As historically experienced by black folks, the church has come light years in terms of facilities, organizations, and programs. But in terms of personal ministry, its fruit has yielded a bitter harvest. Too often, the modern church defines its success by things such as a beautiful sanctuary, a fleet of vehicles, the size of its budget, the composition of its composition, and the success of its foreign ministry. But we have lost our effectiveness as a balm for the soul. No longer does the church serve as a plumb line for personal conduct. No longer does it trumpet the existence of a roadmap by which we can chart the course of our journey through this world. If the church, which is the salt of the earth, has lost its savor, then how or with what shall it be seasoned? Our concept of the black church in the community, in a community of long-range encouragement, training, and inner discipline, is shaped by our individual and collective experiences. When we become a part of the modern church, we have the opportunity to enrich the congregations that we are serving with by contributing the positive aspects of Christianity and the black experience which we possess, rather than becoming assimilated into a dissimilar congregation. We should expand the realm of that worship experience by infusing seasoning of soul into the ministry of the church. The soul of substance over form, the soul of earnest compassion, and the soul of love that overcomes the obstacles of race, age, or station in life. The infusion of soul empowers relevant, enthusiastic, effective, action-oriented witnessing. I challenge you to move beyond the traditional schools of thought. I urge you to try innovative approaches to engage in creative thinking. Think back to the period when our church served as a spiritual fountain, an educational center, when it was the source of political power. It was a source of urban renewal. It was a financial center, a social service agency. Indeed, in many of our communities, it was the educational institution of choice. Envision, if you will, for a moment, what it was like when the church and their religion were the only things that African Americans could claim as our very own. It was the place where we could be ourselves without fear of retribution or reprisal. Their material resources were meager, but the quality of life in those churches was rich. Although we could not control our social destiny, we were not We were not even controlled of where we could eat, sleep, work, or live. We in that church and in that time had control of our souls, and we retained control of our families. Let me hasten to say to you that it is both desirable and necessary, ladies and gentlemen, to possess material wealth. It can be one of the means through which we are able to re-empower the church and reclaim the minds, bodies, and souls of our people, particularly our young people. But possessions must never be viewed as, possessions must be viewed as complements to life and not the essence of existence. We can refocus the church. We can refocus church missions on inhabitants of communities around us. We can strengthen our vocal witness by backing our words with deeds. We can have appropriate actions to meet the needs of our communities. We must establish meaningful communications with other individuals, groups, and organizations concerned about the plight of modern-day society and the role of the church in finding solutions. You and I must extend the gospel of peace, love, forgiveness, rehabilitation beyond the climate control structures to the hedges and highways where the ripe harvest is waiting for laborers. We can, and we must, resurrect the ministry of the black church as a new and effective ministry in the present-day church, not just for the benefit of Methodists, but for the benefit of the entire world and for the betterment of our souls. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Well, the judge has given us something food for thought and good information. Reverend, yes, do you have him preach in your church? Well, I certainly enjoyed your message.
Thank you.
Certainly. And, you know, when we come to functions like this, a national meeting, we meet friends from all over the country. And this is good. I always remember a saying of Jack Benny during the years of the war, that he never left home because every place he went, he saw someone that he knew. Talking to the judge, he and I went to the same high school. And that certainly made me remember this. During the time that I went to high school, there was only one black high school in the city, in Baltimore, Douglas. The judge said he went to Douglas. So we certainly have something in common. I certainly know that we enjoyed his message, and we certainly hope that you will abide and do the things that he says that we can for the church and for laity. We are an important group of the church, but we must be working with our ministers. both are going in the same direction for the glory of God. And we cannot have a war with our pastors and have success in our church. Now I know that we tried to give the judge as much time as he wanted for his message, and we rushed you in your meal. Take your time and eat your dessert. Okay, thank you.